So, before we start this episode of The Power of You in Fiction, we've got a real quick public service announcement. All right, so for this episode of Blurred Dump, right, that we're talking about here, it's about the effect of othering on your experience with fiction and how being different affects the types of fiction you're exposed to. And the guests we'll be talking about in this special are a group that we'd like to call the Blurreds of the Midwest, because they're all from the Midwestern region of these United States.
Yeah, and it's super interesting that that's a through line we found in our research, especially since we're both coastal, and three out of four of our characters in this episode are coastal now.
Yeah, man. And one thing I found interesting when I spoke with Shelly Romero is how people of color interact with their nerddom because of geographical influences. And as I went back and listened to our other interviews, it was something that I saw paralleled with several of our guests.
Yeah, and we're not saying everybody in the Midwest is like this, but it seemed to be a commonality we found in our research. So that's what we're feeding back to you all as listeners.
Yeah, man, we're just trying to keep this journalistic integrity at its highest levels. Because, you know, since we're journalists and all. Yeah, yo, that always makes me chuckle, though, because it's, like, pretty dope.
Nah, it's really dope.
Yeah. So, without further ado, we'd like to present to you all episode 2 of The Power of You in Fiction, titled Like No Other.
There once was a girl named Jay, a curious kid who loved to play. One day at recess, she saw all the boys gathering around to play with a special toy. It was something new and clearly very fun, but when she asked to play, "Go away," said everyone. She standed strong and asked why. "Because you're a girl, so don't even try." When she went home that day, she told her dad all about how the boys made her sad. Her dad replied, "Don't mind them. I'll buy you one myself." Jay simply said, "I'll stick to my toys," and took her dolls off the shelf.
I'm coming in good. How you sounding?
Sounds all right on my end.
Yeah, you're coming in well here too. Okay, sweet. We can get to it.
All right.
Power.
You.
Wilson.
Lou.
You are now tuning in to the Common Title Podcast, and this is The Power of You in Fiction.
I guess I should back up. I think it's, for me, it's just like a different way to relate. It was a different way to relate to blackness and otherness. But I think the power in, you know, how you first have to be able to imagine it to achieve it. Like, if you can't even imagine it, like, that's so powerful. Like, if external forces and, like, white supremacy can just even limit how you imagine yourself, like, to the point where you internalize the limits, I think fiction can be, like a really healing way to break through that, or like a really healing antidote to that.
What is up, Homicidal fans? It's your boy Lou, and we are back for another episode of The Power of You in Fiction. The story you just heard is by our social media manager, who you can follow on Twitter at Blurred in the City, that she created during the infamous Gates of Homicide. And we wanted to greet you with that story because the othering effect that Jay experienced is something very pervasive in the Blurred experience from a bunch of different angles. Now, when we were putting together this episode, it's a through line that my co-host found. So,
what's up, peoples?
I'm actually, even though I'm still producing, because Wilson found this through line, pitched this one, and outlined it, going to step back for a second and let him drive this episode. So you want to take it away?
Yeah, no doubt. Got the oop. So just imagine, imagine you are living in Miami. You got that sunshine year round, fair weather. You've got the beaches. I mean, even LeBron took his talents there for 3 seasons, right? But imagine that you're there as a kid, and then all of a sudden, you gotta move. On top of all of that, you're 14, about to start high school. We know how crazy that middle school to high school shift is. And where you're moving to is the good old American heartland, the Midwest.
Sounds like a horror story.
Right? So this is the story of the star of our episode, Miss Shelly Romero. And Shelly is moving to a new state, and she's also Latinx. She is Honduran. And so nobody, I mean nobody, looks like her. She's really, really like no other. Talk to me a little bit more about that shit, that move from Miami to Missouri.
Yeah.
So at the age of 14, so that, for me, that feels like a cataclysmic event.
It was. Oh my God. When you're 14, you're coming out of middle school, you're about to go to high school. That's a huge shift in your own little life, and combine that with moving across the country to a place you've never ever visited. You don't know what's around there. You're a mall rat, so is there a mall there? I grew up going to the mall so much in Miami, and I grew up with my friends. We had known each other since elementary school. We went through, our first taste of fandom being emo kids, and suddenly I'm dropped in the middle of Missouri near Fort Leonard Wood, the Army base. And I just look down the street and I'm like, there's nothing here. There's just a highway. Where's the mall? There's a Walmart. Okay, cool. There's no Publix though. And so it was hard. It was hard to leave what I, knew was my home, was my culture, was my people. And I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know anyone. And these were kids that also knew each other since they were in elementary school. Their parents were military or retired military, or they still work on the base. They went to the same schools, were part of the same clubs, band, whatever it was. And I was just coming in, this little emo kid coming into this very majority white school.
Right.
Although there was, there's some minorities kids, it was different. And even then, when I noticed that there were other Hispanic kids, we were actually separated because there were students whose first language is Spanish, and mine is as well, but they were put into separate classrooms because they mainly spoke Spanish. They didn't speak English as much. And so even then I couldn't even find a community because they were separated from me. They didn't, speak my slang, my really terrible Spanglish. So it was just very, very hard. But I left Miami when I was around 14, and that was so pivotal to my upbringing, that I was surrounded by Hispanic people, people who looked like me, people who talked like me, people that I grew up with. And then I left to Missouri.
That's a shift. That's a big shift.
Yes, it is. I left to the Midwest, and I was no longer surrounded by people like that. Where are they? Where's my community in this sea of white?
All right. And so Shelly's shift, that's a tongue twister, ain't it, y'all? Shelly's shift is an oldie culture shock. She had to step into a whole new world, like Jasmine and all that, Aladdin. Here it is, though. It's like there's this change, right? Being a person of color, being a minority, that's new to it. And what we realized was that we had some other blurs and people of color that weren't so new to this, kind of used to it, that we interviewed that were either friends of the show or newly appointed friends of the show. And we wanted to figure out what's going on there. So we got a chance to talk to one of our favorite guests, Miss Tana Tucker.
Wait. But isn't Tana based out of Cali?
Yeah. So Tana is based out of California. But we found out when we were talking to her about this POYF stuff is that she grew up in Ohio, right? That's where she spent those formative years.
You're right. And yeah, so Tana is lovely. So she had to have some friends. So maybe she would have been able to help Shelly through some of this?
Maybe. Tana, question for you. Two questions. First question. Who was your first comic book friend?
Oh. So.
I know, right? It's just like the most nostalgic ever.
It's so true. Oh. So I'm going to kind of let this blur into just like nerd, like comics, sci-fi.
Do it.
Yeah, my friend Ben. Like, and we met when we were like probably in first grade.
That's why the all was okay. I get the all now.
Yeah. So we've been friends for many years. But yeah, that was my buddy. And then so a lot of my friends, I got along with everybody. I was good friends with like boys and girls. But like the people that I related to for just like this kind of stuff for many years was just like white boys. So, like in grade school, probably to middle of high school. And then I met, a girl in high school and we were like really happy that we found each other. And then, growing up, it was like all white dudes, for like relating to with this kind of stuff. And, but I also think a lot about the reason why it makes me like nostalgic is because, like I was in for like grade school and high school, like growing up, I was in a lot of white spaces. Mm-hmm. And even if I wasn't consciously thinking about it, I think that like kind of being the only one probably impacted like why I gravitated to these kinds of worlds and, you know, kind of like imagined spaces. And a lot of my friends were, you know, we didn't talk about it at the time, or maybe they weren't out in high school, but a lot of my white male friends were queer. So mm-hmm. I felt like I wondered if we were, you know, we weren't like really having those conversations in high school, but like, were we relating to these spaces in a different way? Like, you know, as someone who's just feeling othered and kind of like perceived as an other. And my friend, my very old friend, like we talked about that as adults. So it's kind of like, you know, finding community through the safe space of like science fiction and fantasy where it celebrates otherness.
Okay, so this is the secret. So Tana, even at a young age, subconsciously gravitated to other people who were labeled as others.
Yeah, right. Because you and her, when we were talking in the interview, talked about Lucas from Stranger Things.
Right, because I had a conversation with my father where he said he didn't get why Lucas, living in the middle of Indiana, would find all the nerds to hang out with. And I said, it actually makes perfect sense because Lucas is physically other and he can't escape being other. So it's only natural that he would gravitate to other people who were different, just like he was different. And yeah, that was Tana.
But the thing is, Tana didn't explicitly feel those moments of ostracization. So it was there, but it wasn't overt to her. But for Shelly, on the other hand, right, being in Miami and in this very strong Hispanic community for so long, once she got to Missouri, She felt that off the bat. But problem was, at the age that she didn't have the language for that feeling of othering / microaggression. Still staying around the whole idea of you finding your community through the internet, and then you mentioned the othering piece that I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, you realized once you looked at your experiences through retrospection, right? You were like, oh crap, this is what was happening at that point.
Okay? Yeah.
So how'd that influence your view of the communities that you found when you were a teenager, once you learned that the microaggressions or the outright aggression that you faced in some of these forums were under the umbrella of othering?
It's an awakening, you know, you get woke. Gonna use that right there. When you're growing up, you think that what's happening is kind of like the yeah. normal, or you know, you feel off about it, but you don't understand what's behind the things that people say or do. We didn't have the word microaggression when I was in middle school or on the internet in my younger days. We didn't have the word othering. I didn't know that was a thing, but when you look back to those fandoms, it's kind of like, oh man, that was pretty terrible. That was pretty crappy that happened, or that was said. Most of the time you could get around it and avoid it because those forums are anonymous, or you have usernames, unless you specifically say, I'm so-and-so, and this is, you know, me or my identity and my culture. You stay behind the keyboard, hidden. But even in the, you know, like the fandom of my favorite band, you often get pushback from like the older white men who were around when the band was first punk and when their music was way better. And, oh, you came in as a middle schooler and you're a girl and you're just a teeny bopper who doesn't really know about the band's discography. Let me quiz you on all of this. So it sucks because it's like, okay, but this is what I resonate with. Shouldn't that matter? Shouldn't it matter that, like, I find a piece of myself here that I relate to this, that I can, you know, binge watch this Netflix show because I personally relate to this character? Or can I not go to this concert and be in the pit with my favorite band playing on stage just because I'm this kind of person or this? So it's just, it's heartbreaking. And I'm like, I can't imagine like how tough, like, it must be for kids still. But I know like the younger, oh wow, I sound so old. Like kids or teens have had the internet since they were born, and they're pushing back against theirs. They're woke. They know what's up and what's wrong, and they're, you know, calling stuff out. It sucks that, you know, being in my 20s, we didn't get that chance to kind of push back against that, but we're able to do it now. And then on the other side, it's good that these other kids and these young communities who are young and these communities can do that, can push back and be like, no, that's a microaggression. No, stop being sexist. Stop being racist. Stop.
Okay. I think I get it. So Shelly, after experiencing this entire world and upbringing where she wasn't the other, was thrown into a space where she was, so she felt the things that were more subtle rather immediately.
Exactly. And like Tana, she didn't catch those hard times feelings because those were the only times she knew. But the one thing was, she was always present, and she knew that she was like the only Black woman in her group. So I think she could relate to those feelings of ostracization.
Right, because when you talk about the difference, there is a difference in how the fact that you are other was felt, and not whether or not they felt it, and they both felt the feeling of being other.
Word. So it's so for Shelley, we'd look at it as, I know I'm different. I don't know if I'm different because I'm new to the environment or because I am different physically. Like, outwardly you see that I'm different, but I know it's there. And Tana, she knew she was different. She can see it since she was generally the only Black woman in her group of friends, but she didn't think it was foreign.
I think I follow you. And I know I've been letting you drive this episode and all, but how are we going to relate this back to the power of you in fiction?
Good question, bro. And I got you. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about Black Superman. And I'm going to pull in another special guest to tie this up.
Black Superman? We really about to talk about Black Superman? You know Black Superman doesn't work.
I got you. You just got to stay with me. Just stay with me, right? And then you'll be able to tell the listeners why Black Superman doesn't work. And we'll get to the whole power of you in fiction piece following this break.
He's a real now a man.
The future is here, and one man might save us from it. Nowhere Man is an award-winning series which follows Detective Jack McGuire. Granted access to powers through future technology, he is tasked with helping a time-traveling agent trapped in his subconscious stop hidden threats at all costs. With a recently successful Kickstarter campaign, Nowhere Man Volume 3 is due out August 2018. So pick up a copy at forwardcomics.com and follow the journey of Jack McGuire as it comes to a close. That is forwardcomics.com, COMIX. Hey, Comicidal fans, Lou here, and it is my turn to make a pitch for a producer or audio engineer. I love the feedback that we've been getting for Poyif, and I know Wilson said we don't normally have bells and whistles. Some people said, well, what happened in episode one? Well, I've been brute forcing this joint, and it's hard because I don't know audio. So if you are an audio engineer or producer that would like to work with podcasts, we are narrowing down our search. So contact us soon. All you have to do is send an email to podcast@comicidal.net and put producer or audio engineer in the subject line. We'll get in contact with you and see what we can work out. We look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, so as promised, we're back and we're ready to show how much power fiction had for these blurs of the Midwest, and how there is power in being different, in being that other.
Now I think I see where you're going.
Word. So to help us with doing that, right, brought in a special guest who was born, raised, and still lives in Kansas. Like, she's a trooper, and she's going to help us out with this.
Wait, you don't mean LaCase, do you?
Indeed I do.
Nah, you can't steal my guest for the next episode whenever it's convenient.
I got you, bro. Chill. We'll introduce her in detail during your episode, but I just need her this real quick time because her story is great, man.
All right, you got it. Only because LaCase is awesome.
Word. So, if there are no further interruptions, I'd like us to take this tale like smack dab in the middle of the Midwest, y'all. Like squeezed in the middle, smack dab in the middle. Yeah, like that.
Can I ask what it's like being a black woman in Kansas? Did you grow up in Kansas?
I did. My family immigrated. Gosh, we feel like immigrants sometimes, but you know, and they were Exodusters, and post slavery, my family moved here to farm, and like so many black people who went to the Midwest, like I mean, Iowa, Indiana, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, we all came here with the promise of land. You get the land, and then once the land's valuable, it's stolen. So on my mom's side, we had our land stolen. But yeah, my family's both of my parents grew up down the street from each other in a small town called Great Bend,
right,
which is in western Kansas. Every black person knows each other. everybody knows everybody. It's a very close-knit community. So in a lot of ways, it kind of is like an immigrant community because you have to rely on each other. To answer your question, growing up as a black woman in Kansas, especially one who's like got dark skin, is a little nerdy. I wouldn't say my childhood was like particularly super difficult, but it is, unlike a lot of, it was tough. It was tough in its own way.
Right.
So I really did turn to movies and, comics and any type of, you know, escapist media I could to feel like I was somewhere more exotic, you know, somewhere maybe a little bit more welcoming.
And yo, you would never believe who she found, bro.
No. We're not doing this. You're a liar. I know the case didn't go there and find Superman.
Yeah, I'm lying. She definitely didn't find Supes while she was in Kansas. It's a whole lie. But I mean, it was like, the case is in Kansas. We're putting the story in Kansas. Supes is in Kansas. So I was like, yo, one in Rome. Yeah, I mean, let your co-host go off about Black Superman.
So to break this down, I'm going to start at the beginning.
Martha? Martha?
Shh, you'll wake him.
Whoa, Martha, what are you doing? Put that thing back. We don't know where it came from.
He's not a thing, Jonathan. He's a baby. A little baby. Who would put a baby in a spaceship?
That's just my point. Could be Russian. A Sputnik baby.
Oh, really?
Maybe he's one of ours. You think NASA's missing a kid?
I don't care where he came from. All I know is he needs us, Jonathan. Look how he's reaching out to you.
Cute little fella.
This is Ma and Pa Kent's reactions when they find a little baby boy in or around an alien spaceship that, for all intents and purposes, looks like them. But 80 years ago, in the middle of Kansas, it's unlikely that the Kents would have responded the same way to a little black boy. Late 30s, early 40s, we're still talking officially restricted neighborhoods, segregation, and LaCase mentioned the shaky history of the Exodusters, who fled the Deep South to Kansas in the post-Civil War era. Reaction to a black alien baby may not have been the same. I don't even know if it would have been like, since his powers probably ain't kick in yet. Now let's assume for a moment that the Kents did take him in. How would the neighbors look at the Kents raising a little Negro boy? Where does he go to school? Jonathan Kent's whole philosophy in regards to Clark was centered around Clark keeping a low profile and going unseen.
I just wanted to help.
I know you did, but we talked about this.
Hey, what you got there, son?
Permission slip. So the football team. A couple spots opened up. They're having tryouts this afternoon. Come on, Dad. You played football in high school?
That was different, son.
Why?
You know why.
If you go running half speed, that won't hit anybody.
A lot of things can happen in the heat of the game, son.
Most new guys hardly even play. Chances are I'll ride the bench half the season. Dad, I can be careful.
This would have been impossible for Clark to blend in plain sight as a black kid with a white family. And Clark's continual fantod over his desire to be normal would be a farce.
Clark, I know you're upset. Son, but it's normal.
Normal? How about this? Is this normal? I didn't dive in after Lex's car. It hit me at 60 miles an hour. Does that sound normal to you?
Clark wanted to because he was robbed of exploring normal experiences due to his abilities. His want is rooted in the fact that he had to hide who he was, and it'd be easier if he was just not special. But everyone that looked at him thought he was anything but. On top of all that, that trademark unyielding moral compass of Clark Kent, as well as his timid low profile, would likely not have gone the same. 1950s Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka was a thing in the Supreme Court. Black and white kids played in the same parks in Kansas, but at the end of the day, they're able to physically see the types of neighborhoods that white kids went back to. Housing desegregation wasn't improved till the race riots that happened in the wake of Martin Luther King's murder. And let the first super-powered humanoid have been a black man while the FBI was investigating the Black Panthers. Ooh-wee. In Kansas, there's about 171,000 black people, which is roughly almost 6%, and 92,000 of those live in Topeka, Wichita, or Kansas City. What's a black baby boy doing in Smallville? I mean, in our current times, we still have Kansas state lawmakers that say that marijuana laws shouldn't be passed because African Americans respond worse to the substance because of their character makeup and genetics. All of this has an effect on your upbringing and the character you turn out to be as an adult. And the stories you want out of a reporter, the motives you have as Superman, just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, you make a good point. The whole idea is Superman as a black man, when the story was written, doesn't connect with all the societal and racial implications that a black person would have growing up in middle America like that, and then being endowed with such prodigious powers and trying to blend
right in. Right, so back in your original story, who did LaCase really find?
Oh yeah, so LaCase for real found Storm, aka Miss Aurora Monroe, Kenyan princess, witch priestess, and mutant. You know, she's out here manipulating the weather. That's who LaCase found.
The question we always lead with, we always have an opener and a closer, is when is the first time you remember seeing yourself in fiction? And what were the repercussions of that? How were you changed by seeing yourself in that character? What character was it in any form or media?
Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways I saw like what I kind of think of as like aspirational images of myself, like who right. I wanted to be. You know, like seeing Princess Leia or... who's another good one? Strangely enough, like Indiana Jones, I always thought they were so, you know, fearless and tough. But the first time I like really started seeing myself in a character was when I saw Storm in X-Men. That was the first time I was introduced to like a strong, black, fearless woman who was above all things kind and brave. So the aspiration kind of switched to something that was really conceivable for me, in, you know, in my own childlike way. Like I could realistically, without all the powers, model myself on someone like her. So that was really, that was a turning point for me in terms of fandom and my appreciation of nerd culture, because it everything changes when you can really see yourself in a character. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to like a character, but it's a totally another thing to see yourself reflected, even like on a surface level, in a person that you admire.
Can you expand on the difference in those feelings?
Oh, sure. Well, I guess like the best example, I mentioned Indiana Jones. My dad and my mom are huge nerds. You know, we watched everything. So, I mean, I'll never be a straight white male. You know, I'll never be an archaeologist. That's just not me. I'm terrible at chemistry and, you know, I don't really like dirt. So that wasn't feasible. Not a huge fan of dirt. You know, it's great. Like, it's a huge part of archaeology. A lot, and surprisingly, a lot of chemistry, like, dashed all my dreams when I was in high school. But, you know, there was, I could maybe emulate some of his qualities, but I couldn't really ever fully identify with Indiana Jones. That's just impossible. And you could say, on the other hand, well, a case, you can't identify with Storm. You know, she's a fictional character, she's a mutant. But that wall is really broken down when you have someone who not only looks like you, but in her own ways kind of faces things that you might face in your everyday life. I'm not a mutant, but I'm a black woman in Kansas. You know, I'm not a superpowered hero, you know, but I struggled as a young person to like kind of assert my own like morals and ideals and stuff, and maybe kind of a restrictive environment. So I think it's so important that we have characters that are different, because it really does. It just breaks down those barriers that keep people from really wanting to push themselves further, because it becomes a possibility instead of just, you know, a fairy tale.
Yeah, man. If you can conceive it, you can achieve it. And LaCase seeing Storm changed her life.
Yeah, man, word. And I mean, with LaCase being so young, right? When she picks Storm, it just makes sense by developmental psychology that she would pick somebody to emulate and aspire towards. But what happens when you're 14/15 and now is the first time you're really feeling othered? Who do you pick? And that's the question that we got to for the star of our show, Miss Shelley Romero.
When I think of characters that I was attracted to because they were different from my childhood and from those nostalgia years, I definitely think of one superhero, and that is Rogue from X-Men. When I was growing up, it was when the first X-Men movie was being made, and, you know, Anna Paquin gets casted as Rogue. And, you know, you watch the movie, and she's just this sweet girl that had a normal life, but all of a sudden, she develops her mutant abilities and has this incredible, powerful, and very dangerous power. And the fact that she just couldn't touch anyone, that she was just so different from the other X-Men, it was something that I just really loved about her. And she's so sweet and everything. But on the other hand, I think I was also attracted to the other version of Rogue from the X-Men Evolution animated TV show, who is this very dark, moody, goth teenager. And, you know, she still has Rogue's signature white stripes in her hair, but her hair is cut shorter. She, you know, dresses in fishnets and mesh, and she wears like these heavy boots that are kind of like Doc Marten boots. And for me, she was the epitome of cool, and she was, you know, very different from other teens. She was different from other X-Men still, and I just felt like I wanted to be her. I wanted to be that cool, but I also wanted to be someone who had such an incredible power. Despite the consequences that Rogue often faced because of her ability or inability to control her powers. So I definitely think that I was very attracted to her, and I think to this day, you know, Rogue is still one of my favorite superheroes. I love seeing her different interpretations. And even now, sometimes I look at my hair and I'm like, I definitely want a white stripe in my hair just like Rogue. I still definitely want to be Rogue.
Ah, and Rogue makes so much sense for Shelley after listening to you guys' interview. From the way she looked in her styling choice to the fact that Rogue really went through a cataclysmic shift, as you would say, when her powers awoke and suddenly she couldn't touch anybody. They were really living a similar life.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And so part of Shelley's feeling other, right, because of her move, and that was the cataclysmic shift, right? But, right, I've got a lot of buts. Yeah, I got a lot of howevers for this episode. Look at me with these plot twists. If we take a journey across this massive land area that is the Midwest and we end up in Ohio, we happen upon Tana, who would have gladly taken the deal of moving.
Okay, so where did you grow up, Hannah? Like, geographically.
A small town in Ohio.
Ohio. So,
yeah, I definitely relate to the 80s Stranger Things.
I was about to say, yeah, that's...
I definitely relate you. To that landscape.
Rural Midwest America type deal.
Yeah, it's like rural, but like, yes, you know, weird kind of suburby. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's like, that is so foreign to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I went to the Midwest for grad school and I was like, I'm never going back.
I know you're like, why? Why did I come? Wait, Chicago?
I went to Purdue for grad school, and so I was in West Lafayette.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend who went to IU there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I haven't been back, so.
I understand.
I think, yeah, I felt like, yeah, ever since I was really young, I was like, man, that's why I related to Star Wars so hardcore, because I was like, I'm going to get off this farming planet.
That is awesome, though. That's actually very real. That,
like, relating
sort of,
to.
Yeah. Kind that's of sort real. Of how you, yeah, how you, you know, you locked into this. This fictional piece of work, because it was like, I'm gonna get off this desert planet, but I'm gonna get out of this desert town that has nothing going on.
Yeah, I was pretty spacey and like head in the clouds, I think, for a while with that kind of. It was always like a under the surface. I feel like I always kind of had that attitude. But yeah, so maybe that's part of why too. I was really into like science fiction and fantasy in that way. It's like always just escaping. Kind of like, you know, stories too, where it's like, you know, yeah, very ordinary people in a very ordinary neighborhood, and things are happening. So yeah, I was always like into that probably more than the other people I knew.
Yeah. Tana's love for Star Wars. It's part of my love for Tana as a guest, because it was a thing for both of us very young. And I wasn't trying to get off Tatooine. I just thought lightsaber fights were cool. So to see that she had that real connection to Star Wars in that way is pretty dope.
It blew my mind when I started thinking about it. I was like, oh man, look at that. She just wanted to. She knew, in some way, that I'm different, and maybe it'll be a different experience if I go somewhere else.
Yeah, Ohio was her person, Tatooine. She didn't even have a Tashi station to pick up power converters.
Word, word, word. I'm gonna reel you back before you fall into the Star Wars rabbit hole. Cause, you know, I feel as though this is gonna be a two-parter episode, bro. So
I gave you an episode in my series, and you're talking about a two-parter. Talk about taking an inch and taking a mile.
I know, but trust me. Just like how you had to trust me with the LaCase thing, and you were able to go off on Black Superman. Trust that the second part of the episode, right, of this episode, is gonna take us from the Midwest to the southeastern seaboard, right? And it's going to follow another new friend of the show, I'm going to say, you know, our homie Brandon Spuddy B. Davis.
Who, you can't like butter me by using people that I like, because Brandon, fellow Aggie, homie, North Carolina A&T, Aggie Pride, I can let it slide because B's my boy.
Word. I had to pull out all my tricks. All right. So since my illustrious co-host has been gracious enough to give me a little more rope and play to turn this into a two-parter, I'm going to hit y'all with the next time on Dragon Ball Z. I'm joking. I mean, next time on The Power of You in Fiction, we're going to follow Brandon Spuddy B. Davis as he makes his trek from his Midwest location to a non-Midwest location. We're going to talk about his progression into appreciating fiction, comics, anime, etc. We're also going to talk about the flip side of the othering experience, where you move from being othered by non-nerds because you're a nerd to being othered by the nerds as you try to be a nerd, I guess. Kind of trippy, isn't it, y'all? And
yeah, all that and more of Wilson making puns of himself and laughing on the next episode of the Comicidal Podcast.
Word.